Hi, everybody. It's Mary Lou Tyler. This week, I have a very special guest, Melinda Emerson. She is known as the small biz lady. Small biz lady is her claim to fame. And she's the number one, is it? Small business professional, consultant, keynote speaker, author, strategist.
I don't know that
world.
I'm the number one in all of those things, Mary Lou. I mean, they do call me America's number one small business expert often. You know, Forbes named me the number one woman for entrepreneurs to follow on Twitter, but I don't know if I'm number one in all of those occupations.
She is number one, people. She's very modest. Don't let her fool you. So Melinda, it's so great to have you on the show today. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of the work that I do is in upmarket enterprise. But when it comes down to it, especially top of funnel, most of the sales executives and business developers and prospectors are sort of like small businesses running their own corporation and trying to get people to engage. So your experiences and working with small businesses is really impactful, I think, for my guys, because they're really looking at trying to start conversations with people they don't know, trying to get them emotionally involved and engaged, and also be able to serve up an opportunity, in this case, for the next person in the chain, which is going to take that opportunity down to close. Now, sure. In your world, though, you're working with people, or are you working with people who, and there are people on this podcast who listen, who do all sales roles. Is that more of a common occurrence in your world that you have one person doing all roles?
A lot of times, as small business owners, you know, you are the chief sales officer, right? Nobody should be able to sell better than you, even if you do eventually get to the point where you can hire a sales rep. You know, but I actually have a dual role in that my company, Quintessence Group, we actually work with Fortune 500 companies that target small business owners. So like you, I work with a lot of enterprise level customers who are trying to figure out who small business customers are and what is their pain and how do they buy and when do they buy and what are the real kinds of trigger events that would get them to switch vendors. So we work with you know, those groups of folks, a lot of sales and marketing organizations. But then I also do a lot of work directly with small business owners. So, you know, I have my book, Become Your Own Boss in 12 Months, which is an international bestseller in its second edition. But I also have a huge blog and succeedasyourownboss.com. And I do a live weekly tweet chat on Twitter where I answer small business owners' questions live every week on the internet. So we have, you know, I have the unique perspective of straddling both worlds, helping large corporations have authentic relationships with small business customers and also helping small business owners, you know, start and grow successful small businesses. So it's an interesting walk.
I was going to say, you know, it's amazing. So in your world, though, where do you find the most challenges and problems that you solve lie? Is it enterprises selling to small business, or is it small businesses trying to generate more predictable revenue?
You know what? It is 50-50, right? I mean, I think that there are, you know, there are three top reasons why small businesses fail. And the number one reason is because the person wasn't realistic about starting their business in the first place. You know, they thought some magic fairy was going to come and lock and unlock the door every day at their business. The second reason why small businesses fail is because small business owners spend so much time chasing new customers as opposed to nurturing existing customers. And it's interestingly enough, I think large corporations have the exact same problem. It is amazing to me how enterprise customers have a really big problem with churn. You know, they'll get a small business customer and they lose as many as they get because their customer service arm is not there because they don't spend $40,000 a month. Nobody's servicing them. You know, so it's like, you know, if you are going to service that small customer, that 25 employee and under customer, those guys that are, you know, I consider anybody in small business under 20 million, but 95% of all small business owners in the world will never gross over a million in revenue. So some of these guys are really small businesses, you know. But if you're going to service that market, you got to service that market. You can't give lip service to
it. What does that mean to you? What does that mean to you when you say you've got to service that market? I just got off the phone with another colleague of mine, we were talking about mostly what I'm familiar with, which is net new business. And he brought up the whole customer service side of things. I really hadn't thought about that a lot because I'm so focused on net new. So help us understand, you know, where are we falling down? And especially since there's a lot of SaaS companies probably listening to this who are dealing with renewals, and which is a customer service issue, I think.
Sure. Well, I think at the end of the day, anybody will buy something once, but the goal is to get them to buy it over and over again, right? So, but mm-hmm. the only way to get somebody to buy it over and over again is to continue to appreciate their business, thank them. They should hear from you. Nobody owes you business, and that's a large corporation or a small corporation, right? You know, you need mm-hmm. to be having surveys. You need to be doing recency strategies. A customer should hear from you within 7 to 10 days after they buy from you, no matter who they are. And they can hear from you all kinds of ways. They can hear from you with email. I mean, obviously, phone is best. You may not have the resources to deploy, you know, people that make phone calls to every single customer, but every single customer over the lifecycle of a customer should get a phone call from somebody in your business. I don't care how big your business is. And I think that if you show people you care, if you show people you're interested in helping them with their pain, their problem, growing their business, they'll be loyal to you forever. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you treat them like it's a volume game, it's about the numbers. Well, if you treat people like numbers as opposed to like customers, and if you don't have a customer-centric approach, you will be out of business because somebody will come along and put you out of business. Ask all the taxi cab drivers in the U.S. about Uber. Why is Uber booming? Because taxi experiences in a lot of major cities were horrible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you want to invite, a smaller upstart company to come eat your lunch, keep mistreating your customer.
Well, what are some of the levers that you pull in helping your customers really and clients implement a good strategy for retention?
Well, one of the things that I help my customers do is really build a communication channel with small business owners. You know, mm-hmm. you can't, if your corporation has always sold to enterprise level customers, and now all of a sudden somebody's done some research and you now have decided that the small business market is worth pursuing,
mm-hmm.
You can't pursue it for a year and think, you know, it's going to turn around, because it's about like, know, and trust. People do business with people they like, know, and trust, brands they like, know, and trust, and that's big and small brands they like, know, and trust. Mm-hmm. But you have to spend time to build that trust relationship. And nowadays, the best way to build a trust relationship is through communication online, whether it's, content, videos, highlighting happy customers. You really have to spend the time to build a legitimate and authentic social media loop with small business customers. You can't do it for a year and think it's going to start raining more money in your business. You've got to do it and understand that you've got to give it at least a 3-year commitment, particularly because now so many people are developing content and every corporation has a corporate blog and mm-hmm. You've got to make sure that you look legitimate, authentic. You got to look like you care and that it's not just about the money.
Right.
Now, you mentioned small business owners naturally distrust large corporations. Naturally.
Yes, naturally. Yeah, definitely. You mentioned that having a blog is one of the ways that, you know, communication can be established, but that's on the client to actually read the blog. What other ways do you recommend that we entice engagement after we've already signed up? Because one of my biggest pet peeves, let me just share with the audience, already knows this. When I buy an app for, you pay a year at a time, I don't hear from the company until it's time to renew. And then all of a sudden some companies renew without telling me because they
absolutely, they auto, what they do is they set you up for auto renewal. So they really don't have to talk to you. Right.
And I will tell you, Melinda, when I, of the last year, I've probably stopped 6 of the apps that I had because they auto renewed without telling me. I just saw the charge on my card. And these are not small numbers. These are large payouts that for enterprise level apps that I hadn't heard from them for the entire year. And I may not have used the software in this case for the entire year. And only then when you ask them to cancel, do they communicate with you via email?
Oh, yeah. And the price keeps going down. Tell them, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. I'm leaving. It's a game. It's really, really sad. And with a lot of the SaaS guys, I mean, it's impossible to reach a human on the phone. Mm-hmm. If you're really having a problem or you really have a question, you know, getting a human to answer your question is just really ridiculous. I mean, they may offer you a live chat option, but really, it's like, you have my money and I have a question. I should be able to reach a human. Give me a break.
Yeah. What are some of the best practices that you instill in your clients that, you know, look, at a minimum, you got to have this, that, these, and those. Like, what are the top, I don't know, two or three things that you say, look, you can't do this properly unless you have these two or three things. What are they?
Well, number one, don't assume you know what small business owners need. That's the true kiss of death. And secondly, make sure that you are working with firms that know something about small business customers. It is amazing to me how many enterprise-level companies are using enterprise-level agencies to develop their strategy to target small business owners. It's like, well, what would they know about it? Those are people with paychecks too. It's like, it's the blind leading the clueless, you know. So it's like, make sure that the people you are hiring to do strategy for you actually know your target customer and aren't doing a cookie cutter campaign like they did for the other five agencies or the other five corporations they're working with. And then consider using content, leveraging influencers to build your brand and to get out there. And be in it to win it. I realize that at the end of the day, social media for a lot of corporations is coming down to ROI, numbers, sales. We got to show what we're getting for all this money we're spending. But social media doesn't work like that. It's more esoteric. It's more, you know, you've got to build your brand. You got to have people out there understanding who you are, what you're about, your values, and then you can, you know, push products on people. But if you think you're going to use social media to just push out links to, you know, landing pages on your website, don't even bother. It's not going to work.
There's an old saying that it takes just as much time to service the little guys as it does the bigger whales. What do you say
Absolutely.
To that?
I mean, that's completely true, but I think whales and little guys have different problems, you know? Mm. So certainly, you know, would you like to have just three customers, three, you know, zillion-dollar customers? Sure. But the little guys, if you get in the right niche, right vertical for small business, if you are, you know, able to provide value for them in a way that you can still make money. I mean, there's 28 million small businesses. There's only 1,800 large ones.
So, that is a big number difference.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, so yeah. Do small businesses churn? Yes, they're not churning. You know, it's not one out of two going out of business in their second year. Now it's more like, you know, two out of three going out of business. Things are getting better, but I think that the small business market, there's great opportunity in the small business market for a company that's willing to hang in there and really learn and really listen to your customers and, you know, and get the right experts that know your customers. You know, I'm very fortunate in that I have been in business for 17 years. So I have had every kind of iteration of a business. I remember when I was a solopreneur working out of my house. I remember when I was working in downtown Philadelphia and had offices and all bunch of employees and payroll, unemployment, you know. And then now, you know, we're a little bit more of a virtual model. And, you know, we have international customers. And so, you know, I fortunately have run every kind of small business. The only thing I haven't done is taken venture capital money, which I probably never will. But my point is, I understand how to serve your customers because I am one of your customers. You know, so
yeah, you're walking the walk for sure.
Yeah, I can tell you intimately why it's not going to work.
Yes, I hear you. So let's talk on the other 50% now. And since you're a sales and marketing, are you marketing and sales strategist, or do you specialize
definitely, because they go hand in hand.
They do go hand in hand.
Because if the sales department is not doing, if the sales department's shooting us in the foot, it doesn't matter what the marketing strategy is. It doesn't matter what the marketing message is if we can't get the sales organization to implement the strategy too. It doesn't work.
Okay. Right. So let's talk about that side of the business now, because I think some of the listeners here consider themselves solo practitioners, entrepreneurs. They wear multiple hats. Is that the profile that you're seeing in the small business today that you work with?
Absolutely.
And trying to help them? Yeah. Okay.
Absolutely.
So tell us about that. Tell us the day in the life of setting up conversations that you have with the guy or the gal, or is it a department of marketing and sales? When you walk into a small business, typically, what do the personas look like? What do the buyers look like, and the people who are actually generating revenue?
For one, it's not usually this big team of people. You know, it's usually the CEO is the founder is usually the main salesperson, and then they might have, you know, 1 to 4, maybe 5 top salespeople working for them. These aren't big sales organizations. These are small guys who eventually get, you know, a director of marketing, and then they get, you know, a sales rep or two, and that's how they do it.
And where is the first aha moment? When does that come in, or what do you see? Okay, so now I got a CEO. I've got, you know, I may have been selling and I've been pretty successful at it, but obviously my bandwidth is not there, so I need to delegate that role. So I get my first sales guy, and then what happens?
Well, once you have your first sales guy, then you have to make a decision about how you're going to divide and conquer. Like, are they going to bring in all the new business and you nurture all the existing business? You've got to make a decision about who's going to do what, knowing that you're still going to help that new sales rep get up to speed and learn how to sell what you sell. The second thing is you've got to figure out, you know, this is, you know, top of the year. So it now should be the time when you have this prospect list of who you're going to go after for 2017. I mean, really, I'm referring to more professional service and consulting businesses, but you've got to have that target list. And then you've got to start figuring out how you're going to meet these people. Are you going to go to conferences? Are you banging on LinkedIn? Are you just picking up the phone, cold calling people? What are you going to do? And one of the key decisions that you have to make is, are you building a lifestyle business? Are you building a business that one day you want to sell? Because that is going to determine how you sell, what you sell, and how you package your solutions. And so once you make that decision, and let's say you're making a decision that you eventually want to create a business, you know, because what happens to a lot of small businesses is that they are cults of their founder's personality. You know, really, the business can't run without that founder. And that's a very, very dangerous way to have a business owner burnout. So you want to get to the point where, frankly, your brand can be in the room without you being there. And you can have project managers and people servicing the customers without you having to be there. You know, you have to have a mind shift to recognize that, you know, this prison you've built for yourself if you don't do that. And then as you're looking at your customers, you have to make a decision. Are we going to chase more customers, or are we going to look at our customers like a market? And try to see how we can get, you know, bigger, better relationships across the whole organization. Because a lot of organizations now, they keep buying and keep buying companies. So now, you know, most companies are multinational. Most companies are, you know, international. They have offices all over the world. So how can you stop from just doing business with the St. Louis office to doing business with, you know, all of their offices in the country?
Yep. So what I'm hearing is, not you have to figure out your exit strategy, as you said. You You know, where do I want to take this thing? And then how do I want to structure the actual company internally? And, you know, we have the same problems, same issues, in that we're trying to figure out the separation of sales roles. Now, typically I'm working with companies that have multiple divisions of labor, if you will. There's a marketing director, there's a sales operations director, there's a sales director. You know, very seldom do I deal directly with the CEO because it's all delegated by these division heads. But the issues are the same. We have to figure out what we want to sell, who we want to sell it to, where we should position ourselves in the market based on our SWOT, our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats, and also who are the people within the companies that we want to sell to. And then that question you just said is, what kind of companies are these? Are we, do we have targeted accounts, or are we just the spray and pray variety of trying to get as many clients in as possible because we're going to put ourselves on the shopping block later on, you know? So that's interesting that you cover all of that with the small business owner, because that's a lot of stuff to cover.
Well, it is, but it's when you're, a lot of people come to me, they come to me because they have, you know, created a nightmare and they need to reinvent, or they come to me when they're ready to take their business to the next level.
Yep.
And so,
where do you like to work most? I mean, you love to get the problem solvers folks, the challenges, or are you hoping that you groomed your clients enough so that they, you know, they hit the ground running and then they come back to you and say, okay, now we're ready to take it to the next level. Where do you see yourself?
I mean, I love the variety, to be honest with you. I'm not going to say, you know, I just love being a fixer. I love it when somebody brings me a train wreck. I mean, I'm good at being a fixer, you know.
Yeah.
But everybody has something in their business that's a train wreck, even if the whole business isn't a train wreck, right? So, you know, because we all tend to do the things we do well. You know, like, what's a train wreck in my business? HR. Like, I'm not even going to lie to you. My COO is like, keep Melinda away from the people, you know? I mean, and I always joke with him that he's like the union shop steward, you know, like, what are you coming to me about now? You know, just get them to work, get them to do their work, you know? So that's my Achilles heel. I'm horrible at hiring and firing people. We now pay people to do that because I'm horrible. So, you know, but can I come into your business and tell you how to hire people? Yes.
Yeah, right. Of course.
I mean, you know, it's like the shoemaker's kid goes out of shoes, right? So,
right.
I can tell you what layers you need, what levels you need. What I find a lot of times is, well, particularly if I'm dealing with a business that's like at 2-3 million in revenue and they want to go to like 10 million in revenue, the first thing we look at is how much they're outsourcing and how they need to bring those roles in-house to reduce costs and just get better control over their processes and systems in their business. And so it's very common for us to reach out and be like, okay, this let's look at all these people you're paying and how much you're paying them. And what if you had one person in-house that did these three things that you just paid this amount to versus all this money over here, you know? So we start helping people organize their teams and really getting a organizational structure that will help them grow. Because a lot of times what happens to business owners, and actually my new book that I'm working on for 2017 is about this, people, when they hire, and when a small business starts hiring people, typically they hire doers. Can you do this for me? Can you do that for me? Can you do this? But they don't prioritize hiring thinkers. And they don't do that because they think they can't afford it. They think they aren't thinking that, oh, wow, I need somebody else in this business thinking about how this business makes money other than me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they finally, the light bulb finally comes on, oh, wow, I've got all these people in here. And the people that I have can't take me to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
That's when you have to get a lot more strategic about your hires and who you hire and what you hire them for and how you pay them. And, you know, but it starts with making the decision about what you want to be when your business grows up.
Yes. Now let's get back to the sales side of what you said about are they outsourcing sales as well, like the prospecting and things when you come into small businesses? Are they typically outsourcing?
Some people are using firms that are making appointments for them. I think when you say outsourced, do you mean entirely outsourcing their sales operations?
Or like you said, making a point, taking some of the pipeline, the active sales pipeline, and outsourcing pieces of it, or do they outsource the whole thing, or is there a hybrid? What do I'm just curious what you see mostly.
Small business owners tend to be kind of scared to outsource the whole thing because that's a great way to let somebody steal your customers. But it's also, even when you hire people, depending on how you hire them, if they're a contractor or a consultant or something, you've got to make sure you've got pretty ironclad non-disclosure, non-compete stuff, because I've seen it many times. People hire somebody to be their director of marketing or director of sales, and then next thing you know, that person leaves them and takes their biggest client with them. I've seen that quite a bit. So people have to be really careful about, how they sell, how they teach people about how they sell. And really, I'm a firm believer in commission-only salespeople. I believe you should kill what you eat because that will always keep you more motivated. And I'd rather bonus you out than give you a base salary and then plus bonus. And I give higher commission because of that, but after 17 years in business, I have hired every variety of salesperson to work for me. And what I have found that has worked best for me and what works best for me right now is commission only.
Yeah, there's a definite in enterprise, there's a definite move to go to more of a higher base with a bonus structure than commission based. So that's interesting to hear you say that it's working for you there, because a lot of especially at the enterprise level, I can't speak for the small business because that is not my area of expertise, but the enterprise level for prospecting, especially since the job is so tedious and there is a lot of, it's a lot of habitual day in, day out, same thing, making a lot of calls, doing a lot of conversations, working with a large number of records.
Well, I think it depends on what the sales cycle is of the business and what the business sells, whether or not that can work. I mean, I have a business, fortunately, most of our customers call us. So rarely my sales reps are not prospecting for me. They're closing the stuff that's called in.
They're closing.
So
Okay. Yeah, that's
it's a
different.
very different, fortunately I've built my brand and my business in such a way that folk call us. So, we have a great list of people that we've done business with over the last, 10 years since I really moved into consulting. And these guys are closing. So it's a very different thing.
Plus, I'm sure you have an extremely active referral network. That's just
I
another
sure do.
channel. Yeah. And a lot of the listeners on this podcast are business developers, so they're developing business. They're taking cold lists, dormant lists, inactive lists, and they're trying to go after accounts that meet a certain profile. But in addition to doing that, they want to build the referral business so that it actually impacts their inbound work, like what you have, and also a referral. So that, it works in concert, but the focus is to get out there from a list, from a targeted environment, and create opportunities pretty much out of thin air, because it's not like the chill was warmed up by anyone, although marketing does play a role in some of that. It's really up to the business developer to generate the opportunities consistently so that they can scale, is usually when this type of sales function comes into play. And also, there's a dollar amount tied to it that it just doesn't work. It's too expensive if your product or service is less than a certain dollar amount.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. But again, we're talking about, people under 5 million in business and revenue when I'm talking about these guys. But it is interesting. Those folks that are taking a cold list or like inventing an opportunity for a business, that's a different matter. But a lot of times, small businesses aren't set up like that, because most of the time, what happens is the owner or founder has been the one that has built the business.
Yep.
And they finally hire somebody when they just can't handle it anymore. Mm-hmm. And so it's rare for a small business to, you know, be like, all right, great. Here's the vertical we sell to. Go digging through my LinkedIn. Good luck. I mean, that's not what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. And usually it starts off with, even in startups, it starts off with your own personal Rolodex, your own personal network you reach out to, and you're building a referral network. And you may then tackle inbound and get, you know, some people to engage. But if you want predictability, and if you want to scale, and if you want to grow the business exponentially, then, and your price point allows it, your average deal size allows it, then you're going to look at typically an outreach program of some sort that you're going to use as just another channel of lead generation. But this particular channel is accountable down to the penny, because you're the one who's in control of it, as opposed to, you know, you probably couldn't wave a magic wand around your client base and say, I want 10 inbound calls today, all, and three of them are going to result in sales. You know, it may end up being that way, but it's not as predictable as you reaching out to people, knowing the conversion rates, and actually generating revenue off of that. No, it's not for all businesses, for sure. But I was curious, and I'm happy to hear that even in your work, you're still struggling with that separation of roles. I mean, who does what and who's better at doing what? And you may not have as many bodies, so you're probably multitasking people here and there, but the issues are the same.
Definitely, definitely. And what is interesting is when we transition folks into our organization that come from enterprise, you know, it's always really interesting for them, you know, particularly if like the COO of my company is a former senior vice president of sales at Comcast. Yeah, so
okay.
It was a little bit of a culture shock for him. He was just like, you know, so what's interesting is I teach him and he teaches me, right? So,
right.
I'm like, let me show you something. Let me teach you something. You know, he's always like, you know. And then,
so
of
you
course,
mentioned,
whenever he teaches me something, he laughs. Like,
oh, I bet.
Old dog still knows a trick or two.
You mentioned that you're in the second edition of your book, Become Your Own Boss in 12 Months, and you mentioned a new book on the horizon. Tell us about that.
Yes. Yeah, I'm working on a new book for 2017. It's called Fix Your Business.
Okay. Fix Your Business.
Fix Your Business. Yes. Yes. So after years of being branded as the lady that knows how to help you quit your job, I am finally putting a stake in the ground and developing a book for existing small business owners that are ready to take their business to the next level, but they have one or two areas that are train wreck. So I am focusing on helping people build a business that can last. So I am really, really excited about helping people get back their time, freedom, helping them really be able to build a business that can run without them. And, you know, successfully hire people and document processes and systems and onboard people and building successful hiring practices, you know, all the stuff you do when you become a big boy or big girl business.
Right, right. And like you said, the life-work balance is really important. I mean, we've all been there. We've all tried to really figure out a way to do that so that we're not working those 80-hour weeks and that, you know, have a life.
There's a lot of small business out here that are still killing themselves working 14 to 16 hour days.
Yeah, that's,
you know, 7 days a week. And I am about, you know, I believe your business should be working for you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe you should be forever. I mean, in the first few years of a business, your business does own you. But I do believe that there's a certain point it should flip the other way, you know, financially and workload level. And, that's what I'm about, helping people create in my new book, Fix Your Business. And I'm really excited about it.
And when are we going to see that hitting the shelves, so to speak?
Oh, gosh. It won't be out till towards the end of the year, next year.
Okay. So. All right. But in the meantime, we can buy Become Your Own Boss in 12 months.
You sure can, because it's still very valuable and relevant. Cool. If you want to know how to build a very powerful content strategy and social media brand and to build a really good website, you know, how to crowdfund, if that's something you want to do, I've got all that stuff in the updated version of Become Your Own Boss in 12 months, which I'm very proud of. It's been out for 7 years.
So, you know, and very proud of and you business developers listening out there, you know, the whole content piece, the social media, that all applies to us because we are the brand when we're going out there and reaching out to people we don't know to start conversation. We may be the brand for our company, but we are on the signature on those emails going out and the phone calls that we're leaving. We're stating our name, our company. So we are the brand of our company. And I think what Melinda says and writes about in this book is going to be relevant. Maybe not all of it, but there's definitely some pieces of it that you'll notice if you apply to your prospecting efforts are going to help you generate more predictable outcomes, which is what we're trying to do with these podcasts and introducing you to these folks who have lived and walked and been in your shoes and have taken it to a whole new level. So Melinda, how do people get a hold of you?
Well, if you cannot remember my name, Melinda Emerson, you can always Google Small Biz Lady and you'll find everything you want about me. I am Small Biz Lady on Twitter and Facebook. I'm Melinda Emerson on LinkedIn. But if you're just interested in, you know, talking to me about how to work with your organization to target small business owners better, you know, shoot us an email. I'm really easy to find at melinda@melindaemerson.com. There you go.
Okay, very good. So Small Biz Lady is, biz is B-I-Z for those of you wondering.
Yes.
So Small Biz Lady.
That's
thank
me.
You so Small much for your time, Melinda. It was really great speaking with you.
Oh, Mary Lou, thank you so much. It's been great.